Hello again and welcome back. The St. Louis International Film Festival, now underway, presents a wide variety of films of varying lengths and subject matter in feature, documentary, and short film formats. One of those playing later today is a documentary film titled Walking Man. But it's more than just about walking. It's about walking across the state of Missouri and with a mission. With me to talk about the mission and the film is Mark Norwine. He is the walking man about whom the film was made. Eric Norwine is his son. He was with him on the trek. Also appearing with us is Josh Salzberg. He is the director of Walking Man. Gentlemen, nice to have you with us. Congratulations. And I know you're all excited for the red carpet treatment tonight, right?
Thank you. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Josh, let me start with you. Why Walking Man? What got you into this?
Well, Eric and I are actually really good friends. We both grew up in St. Louis, and we've been talking about these issues around mental health for a while. And it was when he started telling me about his family's issues and found out what was going on with this walk across Missouri, which was really Mark's idea of how do we get help, the help that we're able to give students in St. Louis. How do we get that help out to the rest of the state where there are sometimes less resources? And once we started talking about that, we said, well, maybe we should follow your dad and really get inside your family story as well as what's going on, you know, with these stigmas around mental health and mental illness.
Mark, let's guess for a little more detail from you on what got you involved.
Sure. I had experienced a lot of mental health issues from probably the age of 18 until I was finally diagnosed at 52 with bipolar disorder, and started working for Chad's Coalition in South St. Louis. And we're a mental health organization that also deals with bullying prevention, and we also have family support resources.
But there were some incidents, as I understand it, from – I've only seen the trailer of the film. Mm-hmm. My understanding is that there were a number of suicides among young people, which was part of this whole process for you.
That's true, yeah. There were 3 suicides at St. Clair High School over a 7-week period. And Chad's Coalition was involved in going down and doing as much work as we could do with the community once those things had happened. We had about 500 people that came to some postvention resource nights in St. Clair. And so my actual thought was to walk across the state and help communities like St. Clair that don't have the resources that we do have in St. Louis and Kansas City. And was going to do that, and Eric found out some of the things that he hadn't known about my own personal history with suicide, 2 suicide attempts. Mm-hmm. And then working for Chad's and with him just graduating from the cinematic arts at USC, we decided to pool these resources and do this together.
And Eric, you learned something about yourself through all of this, did you not?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny, going into it, I had one rule with Josh, and that was I'm not going to talk about my story. Mm-hmm. You know, I was diagnosed with bipolar when I was 16 and was very fortunate. I was medicated, within 6 months. And, you know, I've been on medicine ever since. But for me, it was kind of this moment, our first day, I was thinking, you know, we're asking all these people to share their stories and open up about mental health. I'd be a hypocrite to capture these people and try to push them to start this conversation if I wasn't willing to do it myself. So then I found myself on the news announcing to the St. Louis metropolitan area that I was bipolar. You know, but then for me, it was really this fun journey of really kind of trying to understand my dad's successes as a father and a husband and a citizen, and then try to learn from what I think he probably perceives as failures, and I've always said is more sacrifice than anything. Really for me, it was kind of this moment of self-revelation and kind of seeing what my future can look like and how I can make this experience something positive.
It must have been quite startling for you to learn about your father's background. And I obviously you were a little bit older when you received this information.
Yeah, I, you know, without going into the whole story so much, Dad is currently writing a book, which I suggest all of your listeners to pick up when it comes out. But at the time, he was just doing some writing and my sister had stumbled across a certain passage that, you know, they had been keeping because they didn't want to scare their kids then and there. But for me, you know, when I found out, my first thing was just to make sure he was okay. And, you know, there's no one else on this planet that understands what he's going through and has gone through than me. And, you know, his blood runs through my veins. And you know, I've said that we already had a great relationship, but this kind of provided a different kind of kinship between us, I'd say.
A great opportunity to bond, among other things, Mark.
Oh, yeah. 17 days walking across the state. There's a lot of bonding time.
Maybe too much.
Way too much, yeah.
A lot of baseball talk.
A lot of baseball.
Well, a lot of good talk in the state of Missouri about baseball these days on both ends of the state.
Definitely.
Josh, what did you learn? You came into this as the outsider looking in. What did you learn through this process?
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is we've I've worked mostly in comedy and comedy films in Los Angeles working.
Well, this fits right in.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. You know, sometimes the question is like, you know, we've worked on like, you know, Will Ferrell movies and Kristen Wiig movies and you know, these funny people. But those, the reason they're so funny is because they bring something real that's so identifiable that we can all like laugh at and relate to. And so that's something that really attracted to me, you know, as far as like, how can we talk about mental health in a way that really, you know, is just relatable? Like we all get it. And we've seen, you know, we've seen interviews with doctors or we've seen, you know, kind of these professional things, but we wanted to get inside and really do something personal and tell a personal family story.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that because you hear a lot of criticism about what the media and Hollywood, quite frankly, does about mental illness. They kind of make fun of it in a slapstick kind of way in which mental health advocates criticize as being very unfair to the severe problem that it is.
Yeah, you know, and I think sometimes that can be the perception. You know, the thing that we really wanted to do is focus on, you know, the real side of the story, be a fly on the wall to what the Norwine family's really gone through. And I think, you know, something that you don't see in the trailer is Lisa Norwine, Mark's wife, Eric's mom, is really, I mean, she's the cement of the family and the movie, to be honest. She's so funny and she's also so honest. And, you know, the humor side of it, it's, again, never like making fun or never. Obviously, like these guys have been through the ringer. They never make fun of what they've been through, what people have gone through. But at the same time, it's like, when you're honest, like honesty is funny. that's kind of what we get out of Lisa and Mark and Eric.
Mark, what did you learn on this trip that you didn't know? Or what was a surprise perhaps? Maybe that's what I'm getting at. You start out, I'm sure, with a certain preconceived notion as to what you want to do and how it's going to work. Most of the time, things don't work out the way we totally anticipate.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and even the film ended up being that way. We ended up on about day 15 in St. Clair, and we're speaking to the students in an assembly, and it did not go well. And they did not want to hear what we had to say, and the principal did not want me to talk about anything of any substance. And so we kind of came out of there going, wow, we just walked for 15 days, still have two more, and we don't know what we have as far as what we're going to be able to do to help people and also what this documentary might look like. Mm-hmm.
What did you want to say that they didn't want you to say?
Well, I wanted to actually talk about the fact that they'd had three suicides mm-hmm. over a 7-week period and that that there needed to be a lot of healing in the school. And I was told about 5 minutes before I spoke that I wasn't going to talk about the suicides.
That's really interesting because they must have known why you were there and what your mission was.
Yeah. I think I was actually more invited in by the community and by the Chamber of Commerce than I was by the school. Mm-hmm. And I think they felt like they had an obligation to do this because of the other business people in the town that wanted us to come in. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they really wanted us there.
Eric, what was your reaction to that?
I wasn't pleased just in the sense that obviously I have a pretty emotional connection not only to the issue but to the walking man himself. So, you know, we had come all this way and we had hoped obviously that, you know, the message would be a little better received. However, you know, I think what the film, you know, what I think Josh and our crew has done a really nice job of is presenting this as a tough issue. This isn't a, you know, there isn't a silver bullet to this, and it's hard. And we kind of came out of St. Clair once the dust had settled and said, you know, this isn't anybody's fault. This is tough. There are a lot of folks that don't want to talk about it. And people that don't have the resources, if you think about it, what's the point of talking about something if you can't afford to do anything about it? And that was kind of something that I started to understand a little bit. And, you know, and so that's kind of what I took away.
And I'd say, like, you know, Eric's expectations. Eric came into the walk looking forward to a father-son road trip, you know, and mostly was focused on getting to know his dad and having fun for the couple weeks. But he got invested. The first school we stopped at, kids come up to Mark every school he goes to, everywhere he works, you know, on a daily basis. And once he tells his story, they're ready to open up and they want to, you know, tell their story and get help. And Eric was really moved by that. And so I think by the time we got to St. Clair, Eric was ready to change the world. He's like, all right.
But what impact did that St. Clair stop have on the film? Mark said he was concerned as to what its impact would be. Was it a positive or negative thing for the film?
You know, we're really lucky. The best decision we could have made was hiring and working with the crew that we worked with. Our director of photography, Jonathan Nicholas, and our editors, Michael Hoffaker and Colin Petir. Like, they had this perspective that even being there in the moment, you know, was sometimes hard to have. And so our cameramen were there kind of really capturing what was going on while I internally was going, why? Like, we were ready for this to be our big moment. And fortunately, you know, for the movie, it shows both sides of the issue. You know, it shows people that are ready to talk and then a community that, you know, for their own good reasons, like aren't quite ready.
I would think that would be an important part of the story, Mark. I mean, clearly there are people who don't want to talk about it, and that's a big part of the problem, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
It ended up being probably the most important part of the documentary, the fact that they weren't ready to open that up again. And I think, like Josh said, if you don't have the resources, or Eric said, if you don't have the resources and you're opening these cans of worms, that's a dangerous thing. You know, that's not necessarily a positive thing. So we just need to get more resources for people like that.
What is your message as you stop at schools and talk about it? Because much of what your focus was on young people's suicide, correct?
Yeah, I think it's on the fact that if we don't have conversations, we'll never have our kids come forward and talk about these things. You know, the fact is there's always this underlying piece that the adults really don't want our kids to talk about it because we don't really have the answers. And it brings up scary things.
Yeah. Eric, how old are you?
I'm 24.
24. Well, yeah. You're not too far removed from that age group that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. What do you think is going on with young people today? Because this is an increasing problem. It's getting worse.
You know, I think there are a variety of factors. I can't speak to all of them. In my experience, just what I've lived, you know, in this day and age, you got to do well in high school so you can get into a good college. And you got to do well in college so you can get into a good grad school. And you got to do well in grad school to get a good job, and so on and so forth.
And then when you do that, you can't get the job.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think as a society, we're always redefining what success is for our young people. And it's not. And on top of it, you look at social media. You know, Dad talks about – I don't think it's not in the film, but he talked a lot about at schools where you get home and no one can get you anymore. You know, you get home from school and Dad joked his sister was always on the phone so no one could call him. But, you know, this day and age, kids have Facebook and Twitter and bullies are a lot braver behind the keys and a computer than they are in person. So I think it's just changing, and I think what my message, just from a personal standpoint, is that, you know, it's not weakness to get help; it's strength. And you know, being someone who wasn't talking about this a year and a half ago, and now that I am, it's the most relieving, uplifting, motivating thing in my life right now. And, you know, so often it's a chemical imbalance in so many people. It's brain chemistry. That's all it is, folks, you know. Dad, what do you say all the time about the brain?
Oh, it's the most complicated organ in our body, and yet we think it should never break. That makes no sense.
We forgive it the least. Yeah. And it's like telling someone with a broken leg to run. And we just got to tell our kids that, you know, they don't have to run with a broken leg. We'll help them get better.
Yeah. Josh, back to you with regard to this problem with young people. What did you see through your process and involvement in this?
My outlook on mental illness and suicide changed dramatically. I mean, I feel fortunate that I got to go through the process while making the movie that you know, someone might have while watching it. I really started out when Eric shared with me that he had bipolar disorder. I didn't know exactly what that meant. I was like, is that like schizophrenia? Should I be concerned? You know, and the reality is it's completely different than schizophrenia. It's something that's really manageable once you get help with the treatment. And so my attitude really and my perspective on mental illness and suicide really came around to the issue for me is about normalizing. You know, 85% of people have a chemical imbalance, and that's not – the unusual thing is to have everything, you know, perfectly okay. And so if we can normalize it and say, hey, this is something that a lot of people are going through, you're not the strange one if you're having these issues, that's the main goal.
Mark, how do we normalize it? Simply through medication?
I think the more research that we have, and we don't have nearly enough, I think the more we research and the better our treatments are, the more it becomes more normalized. I think right now so many people are on medication and those medications are really hard for them to, you know, even work, to get through life. So it's not like we found the things that are going to really be our treatments of the future. And I think that's where we need to go is a lot more research.
Your thoughts on that, Eric?
In terms of normalizing?
You're going through this yourself.
Yeah. You know, I think it seems cliche, but it is – it's just as simple as starting a conversation. And I'm not talking in the macro sense. I'm talking, you know, our only goal tonight, if at the very least people walk away from the film and ask their parents, hey, is there any sort of bipolar or mental illness issues in our family? That's an important question. Because if that was a question that we had paid more attention to as a family, and we're very open about mental health, and you know, if that was a question that we had asked and had been, you know, motivated to ask, I think Dad would have probably gotten help a lot sooner. And so all we're really asking people in terms of normalizing this is to understand that this is a part of life. This isn't anyone's problem. Even if you've been nurtured in the greatest environment, this is nature. It's out of your control. And again, I can't state it enough. You would never blame someone if they had a broken leg.
But there is the stigma, and that is probably one of the big – talk about educating people. That's where the education has to begin.
Right. And to your point earlier about, you know, the media, and I'm saying this on the media, but you're the good one. You know, we associate mental illness with madness as a society because we only cover it when someone does something terrible and tragedy strikes. And then in the wake of it, we're in a situation where we want to talk about mental health, but we sensationalize it as opposed to having what we're hoping to start, and that's a productive conversation before those terrible things happen.
Yeah. How many times have you read stories in the newspaper about so-and-so having done – so-and-so, a former mental patient, has done something that's negative, and that's the impression that people get. Mark, back to you with regard to the walk. And again, my understanding, and I'm looking forward to seeing the film, is that you really were looking forward to talking to people in the rural areas of the state. Why was that?
I think our rural areas have 3 to 5 times the suicide rates of areas like Kansas City or Springfield or St. Louis, the areas that have a lot of resources. And so we really felt like those areas were, in many cases, forgotten. We have 75 counties in Missouri that do not have a licensed psychiatrist in the county.
75?
75. That's two-thirds.
That's really quite stunning.
That's staggering.
It absolutely is. And how were you received in these areas? I mean, were people going, gee, I never thought about that?
I think we were received really well. I mean, I felt like, Herman, we stopped in Herman. We stopped in a lot of small towns. And I felt like people do want to talk about it. They just don't know how to have the conversation. They need somebody to lead the conversation.
Mm-hmm. It was almost as if they were waiting for us to get to town is what it felt like. Like, thank you. Finally, like, you know, everyone had a story to tell.
Eric, did that catch you at all by surprise, learning that the problem is as significant as it is in places like that?
Yeah, you know, we were really, really fortunate. We met with a guy named Scott Perkins up in Jeff City, and Scott heads up the Missouri Suicide Prevention Project, a great project here in Missouri. And Scott and I got to talk, and we said, you know, there are 900 people that died by suicide in Missouri last year, 800 the year prior, 700. If 900 people in the state of Missouri had died by any other cause, there would be billions and billions and billions of dollars poured into making that thing stop. And, you know, we, as opposed to investing in getting people well, I don't think we understand what that means. It means we keep fewer people out of our prisons. It means we keep fewer people off the streets. All of these things that cost us money on the back end, as opposed to being preventive about it and understanding that all of these communities have to have the resources. Otherwise, we're all paying for it in both human costs and financial costs.
Awful lot of people are warehoused in our jails and prisons mm-hmm. In today's society because of a mental illness issue. Mm-hmm. And that does get to be expensive. Well, let me let folks know exactly what's happening tonight because it is important, and that's why we're here. Mark Norwine and his son Eric are featured in this film. The film is called Walking Man. With us in studio are these two gentlemen and also Josh Salzberg, who is the director of it. The Mental Illness Awareness Walking Man film will be shown tonight at 5 o'clock at the Tivoli Theater as part of the Whitaker St. Louis International Film Festival. Gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for being with us. I hope you have a great showing tonight. A lot of people take part in the showing, and a lot of people have the takeaway that you want them to take away from it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. And we are sold out tonight. Can I say go to noonedoesitalone.com and we'll update you on future screenings.
Absolutely. Do that. We'll put that link to that website on ours at stlpublicradio.org. Thank you so much, Mark and Eric Norwine and Josh Salzberg for being with us. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with Joe Johnston in his book about vigilantism in the state of Missouri. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. The program is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.